You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
What's 46 and 18? 74. Yeah, 74 years ago, soldiers of the United States Army had already gone ashore at this hour of the day. The Great Invasion, the Second Front in Europe, opened up, chronicled incredibly well by in the series Band of Brothers. Now, if you've never seen it, I would highly recommend it. The there's all kinds of incredible leadership and actually post-combat related mental health stuff in there. It's chock full of it. Yeah. Yep. It's chock full of it. And there's all these subtle little points that I think that I would have never noticed had I not had the experiences that I had in Iraq and Afghanistan. Whether it be facial expressions or looks or things, I just, you know, there's so much in there. It's an incredible series. So if you've never seen Band of Brothers, I would recommend that you go someplace that has it. I don't know where that would be. It's an HBO thing, so wherever HBO stashes their stuff. And if you've never seen it, watch it. And the they drop into Normandy and just, you know, they're on those, you know, C-47 transports. And just thousands and thousands of American paratroopers. Airborne. Those guys from 82nd Airborne, 101st Airborne, bunch of guys in gliders. And that's what the All Marine Radio head chef, his dad, flying one of the gliders. Tell me that wasn't some balls. Tell me that wasn't some balls. Can you imagine the first mission brief? Yeah. Is it defended? Yeah, it is. What's our job? You have to fly this thing in a straight line at this altitude, and you can't deviate from it. Because there's only going to be a bazillion of you. So, just got to fly it like a big train. What? And then they show the reality of, you know, these guys, it's, you know, it's so different from life now that we know. I mean, they're flying with, you know, the pilots have a 45 sidearm. Not that you would take a rifle into a cockpit, but they've got a soft cover on and a headset. That's what, and then they get behind the, they get behind the, they get behind the steering wheel. Yeah. You know, it's when human beings, did aviation. Now, you know, computers assist us, and then we have all this other, you know, hydraulic stuff that happens in aircraft, and, but back then, human beings did it. So, the 74th anniversary of that little event is today. And I'll play an interview that I played before on All Marine Radio, but it's one of the, it's one of the, my most favorite interviews that I've ever done of all time. And I did it 17 years ago. So it was before, and I lament that I had not already been to Iraq and Afghanistan, because the interview would have been better. It would have been different, because I would have known more. But anyway, the interview is an impromptu interview that I did with a gentleman by the name of Harris Holman, who has since passed away. I was looking on June 6th, 2001, I believe it's 2001. I was looking for somebody who had been at Normandy in the city where I did my show, or in the area. And one of the cool things about doing a program like this is, you know, you find people. And so when my show was, when I did my radio show called Mac Talk, it, one of the cool things was on these kind of anniversaries was finding people in your community that were, that participated in these things. And, I, you know, I found a woman who was at Pearl Harbor. She was a nurse aboard a ship, the USS Solis. And as you're looking at the Arizona, that famous video when the Arizona explodes, as you're looking at it, to the right and kind of around the bend of Ford Island, you would find the USS Solis. Her name was Agnes Scherer. Just a wonderful woman who later went on to work for USAID, I think, USAID in Afghanistan. Went and worked in Kabul. And after, you know, so it's kind of ironic that she, and this, I interviewed her, it would have been after September 11th, because the subject of Afghanistan catches my ear. And I said, well, that's a different show we can do. She giggled and said, yes, that is. But, so she's just a lovely woman, but grew up in a rural, her story I love. If you look at, if you're in front of a computer and you look at, you Google Botno, North Dakota, B-O-T-T-I-N-E-A-U, North Dakota. That's where she was born and raised. So click on the map when all that stuff comes up, click on the map and then scroll out. Okay. Botno is in the center of North Dakota, just south of the Canadian border. Okay. Which makes it literally in the middle of nowhere. Okay. So I picture, and so I said, well, how did you get to Pearl Harbor from Botno, North Dakota? She said, well, I used to go to the library, and I used to read books. And I used to look at Life magazine and see all these pictures of the world, and I wanted to go see it. And I knew my parents wouldn't allow me, you know, to go do these things unless I was safe. And I knew the Navy would keep me safe. And I saw an advertisement that the Navy was looking for nurses. And so I thought, you know, it'd be a good profession. And so it's an awesome interview. But I picture this little girl. And Agnes was born, she would have been 20, she would have been 18 in 1938 or something like that. So she's probably, she was born in 1918, something around there. Going to the library, like, you know, little, some either room in a building or some small, you know, four-walled standalone building that they called the library in Botno County, a farming community in the middle of nowhere. And she has this idea. And lo and behold, she winds up in Pearl Harbor. So I used to love telling those kind of stories. They're awesome. And the journey that these people had. Harris Holman, the interview that you'll hear today, he speaks with this Norwegian. And my favorite part of the interview, I mean, first of all, he describes what it was like to be in those landing craft 74 years ago this morning. You know, how he thought he didn't know how he would live through it. And but he speaks with this, in the interview, he speaks with this heavy Norwegian accent. And at one point in the interview, he says, you know, back then I used to speak with a heavy accent. And it's just very laughable because he still has it. And but he tells this incredible story of D-Day. And again, not only D-Day, but he was a Ranger on D-Day and talks about how rough and tough the Rangers were. And he said, so I'll tell you the story to kind of set it up now that I'm this far into it. But so I'm looking for somebody in the community that's at Normandy. And I can't find anybody. You know, at this time of the year in the Midwest, you know, if you're retired, you know, a lot of people go to their lake homes and they're opening them up and blah, 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 just, you know, right after the Memorial Day weekend, blah, 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 blah. So I couldn't find anybody. All these names that people at the Legion and the VFW gave me and other people gave me, no answer, no answer, no answer, no answer. So I go on the air and I say, hey, I'm looking for somebody. You know, and I kind of open the show. Then we take during a commercial break, this woman calls and says, or maybe it might have been on the air. She said, you should interview my father. And the biggest concern when you interview elderly people is that, you know, that you don't want to embarrass them and that they can do it. And I said, you know, is he okay? Can he do it? And she said, oh, yeah, he's sharp as a tack. I said, okay. She said, he's in an assisted living facility. So if you call this number and ask for Harris, you'll speak to him. So that's what I do. So during the commercial, I run to my office. I call him. I introduce myself. I say, I do a radio show. I wondered if you would come on today and talk about Normandy. He said, yes. He said, I'll do that. I said, okay. And I said, I said, my name is Mike. And I said, I got to call you back from a studio number. So I'm going to hang up. I'm going to call you back in about a minute. And he said, okay. I said, now, Harris, what rank were you? He said, I was a staff sergeant. And I said, what unit were you with? He said, I was with the 75th Infantry Regiment. And I said, okay. And I hung up. And as I'm going down the hallway, I said, the 75th Infantry Regiment, that's the Rangers. And if he was at Normandy, is he one of the guys that went straight up those cliffs at Point du Hoc? Because, you know, if you've read military history, you see that, and you're like, what did they do today? And you look at the cliffs, and they, you know, and I'm like, holy shit. So the interview is this impromptu, it's like, you know, I'm like 8 years old talking to this guy who I'd read about, and all of a sudden get a chance to talk to. And it was one of the coolest interviews I've ever done, asking, like, so what did you take up to? You're going up on ropes, okay? You're walking up the side of the hill attached to a rope, and nobody's pulling you from above, so how much weight can you carry? And what did you go up there with? Well, you had 18-inch German guns. What did you go up those cliffs with? You know, our hand grenades, our knives, and our rifle. That's what we went up there with. Wow. So, 74 years later. Yeah. You know, and then the other thing I don't know why is in my head, but, you know, Yogi Berra, you know, great baseball player and kind of an American icon, relative to sports for his, you know, his unique yogiisms that, you know, you still hear people say, it's not over till it's over. And what was the other one about? It's something about 90% of the game is I don't know. He screws up some percentages. But he, these things he says are all valid. He just has this incredible way of saying them. He was a, I want to say he was a coxswain at Normandy that day. And so he was driving, you know, soldiers from ships to shore. And so, you know, you had people that you would, you know, never have expected as part of that as well. Let's see. Here's a quote from him, from Yogi Berra. I sit and thank the good Lord I was in the Navy. We ate good. We had clean clothes and a clean bed. You see some of those Army men, what they went through? That's the one I felt for. Son of an Italian, of Italian immigrants, Pietro and Paolina Berra. Lawrence Peter Berra grew up in St. Louis in an Italian neighborhood called The Hill. His parents didn't know anything about baseball, but the local American Legion League set him on the path that would take him to the Hall of Fame. It was during his years in the American Legion that he earned the nickname Yogi as a player. When his friend, Bobby Hoffman, said he looked like a Hindu yogi because of the way he sat with his arms and legs crossed when waiting to bat. When Berra turned 18, he put his baseball career on pause and joined the Navy in 1943. Trained as a gunner's mate, Berra worked on a rocket launching boat and served on D-Day. He said about the invasion, being a young guy, you didn't think nothing of it until you got into it. And so we went off 300 yards off the beach. We protected troops. For the next 12 days, his boat was ordered to shoot down enemy aircraft. They accidentally shot down an American plane but managed to save the pilot. He went on to serve in a second assault in France, for which he received a medal from the French government. 60 years later, he received a Lone Sailor Award from the U.S. Navy, an honor given to sailors who use skills learned in the service to advance their careers. The president and the Navy Memorial CEO said, quote, our honorees are living examples of how service to country changes lives and helps develop leaders. So these are some of his sayings. I didn't really say everything I said. Deja vu all over again. You can observe a lot by watching. The future ain't what it used to be. I usually take a 2-hour nap from 1 to 4. A nickel ain't worth a dime anymore. 90% of the game is half mental. Always go to other people's funerals. Otherwise, they won't go to yours. Yogi Berra. He was a part of, I don't know how many Yankee World Series teams. And people that I grew up and hanging around with, you know, because of my dad being in baseball, you know, said, you know, he was just this incredible competitor. He was a catcher and they also played outfield for the Yankees. He said one of the smartest baseball guys they ever knew and a tough competitor. So anyway, 74 years after the invasion of Normandy. Pretty amazing. And then the other thing I want to do today is yesterday when, you know, during the program, I played General Mattis's speech. That's not that. And then they didn't include the Q&A portion of his speech, just his speech, which the Q&A portion is the better part of the that. So I want to play that again today. And listen to that, because the questions are, as you might expect, questions about North Korea, the questions about the South China Sea are very direct. And I will tell you what, he is on display as the incredible, astute leader of the United States Department of Defense. And you can see why he garners such respect around the world. The Q&A thing and the way he handles the whole thing, pretty impressive. Questions about China, questions about American provocations in the South China Sea. And he answers them like a grown-up. And so I think you'll find it, I think you'll find it very interesting. I did. I sat here listening going, you know what, he's good. He doesn't dodge them, you know, but he gives grown-up answers. And very interesting. So you'll hear that. You'll hear Harris Holman. And I want to, try to find a little live audio from, June 6th, when soldiers of the United States Army, the Canadian Army, the British Army, the French Army, all went ashore on the beaches of Normandy in France and, opened up the second front in that Stalin had been screaming about. And the Allies hadn't been able to do. For the Germans, Normandy, you know, it's interesting when you look at the World War II. When you're a kid in the United States, you know, you read American history. It's like we fought in the Pacific, we fought in North Africa, and then Italy, and then we invaded Normandy and defeated the Germans. Then you read German history and Russian history, and you're like, the biggest fight in World War II happened on the Eastern Front in Russia. And we were kind of this is a rear action as Germany looks at it, because their true enemy is Russia. At least it used to be. They looked down on the Russians as human beings. They didn't think the Russian culture was anything near like a peer. So when the Germans talked about peer warfare, they would not include the Russians. Yeah, they're not peers. I'll find a little bit of that as well today, 74 years ago. So if you were 20 years old, you're 94 today. If you do veterans, just say you're 20 years old plus 74. So young World War II veterans are 94. If you're, fought in Korea and you were 20. So you're 20, what is that, 68 years? So let's say 1950. So 50, that's 50 to 2000 is 50, and 18 is 68. So Korean War veterans, 88. Let's see. Vietnam War veterans. And we'll use 1968 as a benchmark. So 68 would be what, 32? No. Yeah, 1968. Yeah, 32 years. Plus 18 is 40. Wow. So if you were 20 years old, that can't be right. I'm screwing up math someplace. 68 and 32 and 18 is 50. There you go, Mac. Add it right. Okay. So our veterans are... Vietnam veterans, plus or minus 70 years of age. Our Korean War veterans, plus or minus 88. And World War II veterans, plus or minus 94. And those if you were young at the time. If you were older, and that's if you were approximately 20 years old on those dates. So, yeah, our aging veteran population. So anyway, today's a huge day for the United States Army in terms of, I'll tell you a funny story too before I open the program. But I was with guys from the 82nd Airborne. We took over from them in Al Anbar. And I'll tell you two quick stories about them. The first one was, we're at lunch right before the day before they left. And there's three of them. Two guys who went to West Point, another guy who was a company commander in Afghanistan and was working ops, was working operations for the division, for the 82nd Airborne Division in Al Anbar. So they were sitting at lunch, and one of them says, should we tell them? And I looked around like, oh, here we go, more and more stupid Marine jokes, right? And they laughed. They're like, no, not this isn't, but we're not sure if we should tell you. And so I said, okay. And they said, no, tell them. And one of them looked at me and said, you guys are harder than we are. I said, like, what does that mean? Like, stupider? What does that mean? They're like, no. No, like, in a good way, you guys are hard. And I asked them to explain. They said, well, this is the longest any of us have ever been around Marines. And we've heard more people get their asses chewed than we've ever heard. We've heard the F word more than we've ever heard in our lives. And you guys aren't as collegial as we are. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, you know, we just watch you when you eat and when you socialize. You're very stratified by rank. You're very rank conscious. And I said, well, yeah, like, how so? So, well, you know, your lance corporals and your corporals and your PFCs kind of eat together. The sergeants may or may not join them. They may eat together, right? Your officers don't sit down and eat in that group. They sit separately, you know, sometimes with staff NCOs, other times staff NCOs gravitate to their own area. But it's very stratified relative to us. And I just listened, and they said, and you guys chew ass, like, it's incredible. You know, we've heard people get dressed down, and I just listened, and I said, well, yeah, that's kind of the Marine Corps. They said, yeah, we've lost some of that. We've become a little bit more civilized, because we've liked what we've seen watching you guys. Your NCOs, man, they rip ass when they're pissed, and they make no bones about it. We've kind of lost some of that. I was surprised. So, but they tell a funny story about, you know, the combat jumps, right? Jumping into Afghanistan, jumping into, you know, Iraq. Some of them had jumped during Desert Storm. So different things. And so they say, you know, we meet these veterans at reunions, and they'll like have two or three jumps. And two or three combat jumps. And so, you know, with young airborne guys who fall for this, they would say, hey, trooper, you know, you got like seven combat jumps. I'm like, oh, yes, sir. And like, where'd you jump? And, you know, this young airborne guy would say, oh, I jumped here and here and here and here and here. And, you know, the kid normally at some point looks at him and says, do you have combat jumps? And the guy will say, I only have three. I don't have, yeah, you have way more than me. And like, where were they, sir? Anzio, Normandy, and Market Garden. Which, if you know anything about Army history, in World War II, it's like three of the biggest jumps the Army's ever made in their existence. And then they say these guys laugh for it. These old guys laugh their ass off. Yeah, I only got three. That's all I got. And they say they just laugh. But tremendous legacy, very cool. I remember the first time I saw in Ramadi at the 82nd Airborne Division Combat Operations Center. You came around this corner, and they had the, you know, it's their insignia is the AA, the two letters on a blue field with a red circle around it. Is that what it is? AA? I think it is Army Airborne. I think is what it stands for. But anyway, they had that, and it was a big sign up on a building, up on a palace, and there was two floodlights that lit it up, and you came around the corner and you saw that. It was cool. It was very cool. Yeah, you're like, holy shit, man. The 82nd Airborne. So, today, United States Army Day. So, good morning to you. A whole bunch of stuff in the news, a lot of political stuff. And I don't know that we'll talk about that too much, but 74 years later, good morning to you. Dedicated to the sailors of the United States Navy who brought the greatest amphibious landing, and it pains me to say this as a Marine, but the largest amphibious landing ever to be staged on the planet at Normandy. The sailors who participated in that and the soldiers that went ashore that day, be they Canadian, Brit, or American, or Polish, or any other expats, that were a part of that invasion. A huge part of the liberation of Western Europe and defining our world today. In fact, you could argue that that invasion has created its own, I don't want to say Pax Americana, but the line that was drawn after World War II is almost where the Iron Curtain was. Has been lifted recently, but it essentially defined the world post World War II. The financial system that we work under today was created after that. The innovation and the advances in democracy and the peace in the region, all defined by the advance of the Western allies in Europe and where it stopped. So, this song is dedicated to those veterans who participated in the invasion in Normandy, be they American, Canadian, or any other nation, Brit, or European, and the soldiers of the United States Army who got off those boats and tried to get ashore. Some of them never made it, and then those who fought all the way to Germany. So on this day, we remember their courage and selfless sacrifice.
To the shore of the glory, we fly.
Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Let me be clear. As hard as the last 16 years have been on our military, no enemy in the field has done more to harm the readiness of the U.S. military than the combined impact of the Budget Control Act's defense spending cuts, worsened by us operating in 9 of the last 10 years under continuing resolutions, wasting copious amounts of precious taxpayer dollars. If you don't get the resources, my closing words, then your strategy is nothing more than a hallucination, because without the resources, there's just so much brave young men and women can do.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's awesome. Can you imagine, were you a Vietnam veteran, and you came home, and they told you to take your uniform off and don't talk about it and just forget about it?
I can't even imagine. I have so much respect for those guys.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, we'll check the weather. Currently, mostly sunny and 70 in Quantico. Sunny and 82 at Camp Lejeune. Mostly sunny and 86 in Granbury, Texas. Big Timber, Montana. Clouds and 60 right now. 29 Palms, sunny and 77, so 29 Palms getting warmer. Pendleton, clouds and 64. Pendleton getting warmer. Okinawa's getting warmer. The whole world's getting warmer. Dark, cloudy, and 82 in Okinawa. 105 in Mars, so Mars has cooled off in Afghanistan. You know what's funny? When it gets really hot over there, you know, between 120 and 130, you're rolling around with, you know, your boots, you know, long sleeve blouse on, long pants. And if you're out and about with your, you know, helmet and flak and all the rest of it, can you ever envision a time in your life when you think 100 degrees is cool? So I remember walking someplace and looking at somebody going, I never in my life thought I'd say this, but how could I ever think that 100 degrees was hot? You know, testament to what you get used to. And let me tell you, one of the amazing things about when you work in Iraq and Afghanistan every day, and you know, my job was to help kill people and help save people. And the number, you know, we hardly medevaced anybody for being a heat casualty. Most of the people, I can remember doing it maybe 3 or 4 times in 3-plus years. Yeah, imagine that. But I think Marines tend to do a great job hydrating themselves. And not pushing it too much, but most of it was hydrating and learning how to operate in that kind of environment, because it's not like we didn't operate. So we did not medevac people that often for being heat casualties. The majority of time that I remember doing it, it's because of some other reason. Once was ventilation issues inside an Amtrak. So they ingested, you know, a lot of, you know, whatever exhaust, and then they got out and they were operating in the heat and they were overcome by the heat. But I think it was complication. The other one was dietary supplements by guys trying to put on muscle. Yeah. And about three of them got medevac, and the medical officer said, yeah, it was because of the shit they were taking. I wanted to make a comment. Well, we'll take a break. We'll come back with tech news headlines. I want to make a comment about, first of all, what AA stands for and in the 82nd Airborne. And then I want to make a couple of remarks about Bill Clinton. You know, I said complimentary things about him as a politician, and that if you can't say those things, that you simply deny the obvious. And you know, it's tough to have a conversation with people that can't at least admit the obvious. And so I want to state some obvious things about Bill Clinton. You know, what an idiot. Yeah, for somebody who's supposed to be really smart, he's pretty stupid. He's pretty stupid. And you wonder why, you know, guys like Harvey Weinstein existed, you know, in full view of everybody. And let me tell you, don't think that they're patrons, right? When you can count the presidents of the United States as in your inner circle, don't think that doesn't have an effect on people that might want to put their hand up and say, hey, something's going on that's really wrong here. Okay. So, anyway, we'll take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up on this day of days, June 6th, 2018, 74 years after the invasion of Normandy.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It'll be kind of like being a pilot. You'll come out of college and you want a cyber guarantee. You know, we'll give you a cyber guarantee.
Great.
And then if you make it through the school, then you'll get qualled, and that's what you'll go do. If you don't, then we'll
room in the grunt.
Make you an infantry officer.
Worked okay for you and
worked
me.
Out for
so.
You. Of course, everyone knows that the most intelligent, handsome people on the earth are infantry officers.
As this would convey.
Exhibit A and B.
That's right.
A and B. Okay, let me before I go back to the 82nd Airborne, let me just make a comment on about Bill Clinton. He's been, for whatever reason, in the public view the last week or so, making comments about Monica Lewinsky. And in the course of that, he's revealed that he's never apologized to her. And some other things. You know, sometimes it's good just to shut your mouth. Okay? Just shut your mouth. Because every time you open it, you make a complete idiot out of yourself. You know, so he said he's never apologized to her. So you're talking about her boss, the President of the United States, used her sexually and then kicked her to the curb. Okay? And, you know, did that ruin her life? She's contemplated suicide, pretty close to ending her life. She will forever be known as, you know, the girl with a stained dress. And he's never apologized for it. Now, somebody say, well, the reason he never apologized is because were he to do so, he'd be culpable, and if she sued him, he'd be liable. Okay. Then shut up. Then shut up. And you know what? She should sue his ass. Because that when you talk about the reason why seniors don't take advantage of subordinates like that, there's a reason. It's a power thing. Oh, well, you know, that really doesn't apply, and blah, blah, yeah, bullshit, it doesn't apply. Ask her what recourse she had when things turned upside down. So anyway, it's just, you watch him on TV, you know, and I think I saw something this morning that said, quote, it wasn't my finest hour. You know, just shut up with that. And it's, I think what he's trying to do is by going on TV and talking about this shit, he's trying to find his way back into the mainstream where he's not viewed as this pariah. And so by talking about it, people become desensitized to it, and he somehow or other deals with the issue. Look, you know, go away with that shit. It's almost like, yeah, I can manage this. It's the arrogance of Pete Rose. I don't have to come out and tell the truth, and you know, and if Pete Rose would have come out and told the truth and apologized and said, hey, look, I've made mistakes in my life, and this is certainly one of them. I want to apologize to everybody in baseball. But he hasn't. He continues to lie because he thinks he can continue to manipulate, you know, the media and use different people to his end. And Bill Clinton thinks the same thing. To fess up, tell the truth, not in his DNA. Doesn't have it in him. And neither does his wife. They are brutal, in my opinion. And so he should just get off everybody's TV. But he doesn't. He does exactly what his wife does, is just burn it down. So anyway, invitation to them to get off all of our TVs. The 82nd Airborne was labeled the All-American Division when it was constituted in the National Army on 5 August 1917, shortly after the American entry into World War II. It was organized on 25 August 1917 at Camp Gordon, Georgia, and later served with distinction on the Western Front in the final months of World War II. Since its initial members came from all 48 states, the division acquired the nickname All-American and was the basis for its famed AA shoulder patch. The division later served in World War II, where in August 1942, it was reconstituted as the 1st Airborne Division of the U.S. Army, not in numerical first, but it was the first in order of being organized, and fought in numerous campaigns during the war. Some of the people, interesting, that have fought in as members of the 82nd Airborne Division. Army General, Army Sergeant and Medal of Honor recipient, Alvin York. Yeah, Alvin York. 82nd Infantry Division, World War I. General James M. Gavin, Omar Bradley, General Officer, Strom Thurmond. He was with the 325th Glider Infantry Regiment in World War II. Senator Jack Reed, R&B singer Lou Rawls. What? Actor William Wyndham. Who's that? Best known for his work on television to include The Twilight Zone and the sitcom The Farmer's Daughter, co-starring Inger Stevens as the nanny for his kids. I don't recognize him. Well, maybe. William Wyndham. Country music singer Craig Morgan, never heard of him. Renowned independent Baptist minister Jack Hyles, H-Y-L-E-S. Former University of Syracuse football coach Ben Schwartzwalder. Famous critic and fashion critic and choreographer Bruce Darnell. Patrick Murphy, who was the Undersecretary of the Army. Louisiana Governor John Bell Edwards. Hugh Shelton. Yeah, so pretty famous lineage. All right, we'll check some news headlines on this day of days. Top of the fold headline, Marine Corps Times, move over, nerds, grunts are learning signals intelligence. Uh-oh. With the new National Defense Strategy, the Marine Corps is amid a structural and equipment overhaul of its forces in preparations for a fight with more sophisticated adversaries, which means grunts are taking on new tasks like exploiting the electromagnetic spectrum. It's not a job they're accustomed to, but as the Corps faces down rising enemies like Russia and China, whose forces are equipped with sophisticated sensors and electronic attack capability, Marine grunts will need to know how to exploit the electromagnetic spectrum. I don't understand this stuff. Electromagnetic attack capability. So, anyway, I need to get somebody on to explain this stuff to me. Because I don't understand the cyber thing. The SIGINT stuff, you know, is jamming and counter-jamming and things like that. So we're all familiar with that. But what form it would take at the tactical level, and I still kind of struggle with that. Expansion of Arlington National Cemetery to open soon with 6,000 pre-dug graves. Whoa. And it shows an aerial photograph. Shows the columbarium courts 12 and 13 at the Millennium Project at Arlington National Cemetery. After 4 years of extensive changes, Arlington National Cemetery has finished the expansion project. It started in 2014 and will open the space for use in the upcoming weeks. The expansion, officially known as the Millennium Project, added 27 acres of land, 6,000 pre-dug graves, and 16,000 niche wall burial spaces in the 154-year-old cemetery, which is slowly running out of room to honor and inter America's military veterans. The new section has room for traditional in-ground burials and is also in-ground burials of veterans' cremated remains. The Millennium Project was the first expansion of the cemetery in nearly 40 years, cost around $82 million. The expansion space was taken out of a recreation spot for a nearby military base, a construction staging area for the cemetery, and the National Park Service woodland area, according to the Washington Post. The expansion features a new system for saving space and using it efficiently, said Army Colonel Mike Peliquin, the cemetery's director of engineering. Concrete boxes used for burials will be double-stacked with spaces for two caskets. The concrete containers will be about 18 inches under the surface of the ground and spaced closely together. According to Rena Yates, the deputy superintendent for cemetery administration, the expansion will add decades into the life of the cemetery. However, continued expansion will still be needed as the cemetery continues to delay the inevitable day when there will be no room left for burials in the military cemetery. And again, with the, you know, Greatest Generation, with all those veterans, I mean, using up space, and then the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, using up space as well, you can see the logistical challenge for Arlington. Following the expansion, Arlington has about 100,000 spaces remaining. According to a 2017 report, the eligibility rules for burial in the cemetery have been changed 14 times in the past 115 years. The cemetery is also planning another addition, one that will add another 37 acres of land. The project, entitled the Southern Expansion, will encompass the land where the old Navy Annex building was located before its demolition. A lot of Marines are familiar with the Navy Annex. It was demolished in 2013. The project is expected to cost $274 million, will be completed by 2025, extending the cemetery's life into the 2050s. So, Arlington. Arlington, a national treasure. And it's, you know, I mean, a very sacred place for Americans. And the holder of just an incredible amount of American history. You go there from astronauts that were killed in the Challenger to Civil War veterans to, to all kinds of people that you may or may not, think would be buried in Arlington. I'll just read you a few. These are people that you might not have known that were buried in Arlington Cemetery. Lee Marvin, Marine actor. William Howard Taft, veteran. And I think he, during the Civil War, I have to be careful. Both Robert F. Kennedy, a veteran of the United States Navy, John F. Kennedy, President of the United States, and veteran of the United States Navy, both buried in Arlington. Jacqueline Kennedy, buried in Arlington. So when you walk through Arlington, you see these incredible see these incredible people, and you know who were buried there. Joe Lewis is buried at Arlington. Medgar Evers is buried at Arlington, served in World War II, and then was murdered in Mississippi. Thurgood Marshall, buried at Arlington. And this is kind of something that you don't. In fact, I didn't know this till I don't know a few years ago. But the guy who laid out all of Washington D.C. and when you go to D.C. and you look at the architecture and the structure of the city and all that, Pierre L'Enfant. Yeah, when you go to L'Enfant Plaza, I'm probably saying that wrong. L'Enfant Plaza. Yeah, he laid out the model for what would become what would be the nation's capital. And so the beauty of the way Washington, D.C. is laid out is he was commissioned by George Washington. Or I don't know why. It was Washington's idea to make sure that it wasn't in New York City, Philadelphia, one of the major cities, that the District of Columbia would be its own city. It would be the federal capital. You know, we had really smart people making pretty interesting decisions. So anyway, but Pierre L'Enfant is, the architect of the layout of Washington, D.C. It included the National Mall, Pennsylvania Avenue, the road that connects the Capitol and the White House. He joined the United States Army during the Revolutionary War. How about that? Glenn Miller is buried in Arlington, served in the Army Air Corps. As part of a band, and was en route to entertain troops when his plane disappeared in bad weather over the English Channel. His body is still missing. His daughter arranged, though, that he would have a headstone at Arlington. Robert Perry, right, naval officer, leader of the 1909 expedition that was the first one to reach the North Pole. Pete Conrad, a naval aviator and astronaut, third man to walk on the moon. Marguerite Higgins, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, only female war correspondent during the Korean War. Yeah, so Arlington, a huge piece of American history. So anyway, that in the news today. If you've never been there, I mean, you have to put it on your list of things, on your bucket list. Because it's, one, it's a beautiful, peaceful place. Second, you get this incredible sense of the sacrifice that has been made in the name of our nation throughout history. And, you know, this is what puzzles me about our people that lead our nation. How you could walk amongst that stuff and not be deeply affected to do your job and to make the lives of the American people better is beyond me. I don't understand it, right? You're around that stuff all the time. And anyway, so, that in the news today. And something I don't really like to talk about, two stories and then we'll do early bird. U.S. commander concurs with the sentence of no prison time for Bo Bergdahl. A senior U.S. military commander is endorsing the decision to spare Army Private Bo Bergdahl prison time for abandoning his post in Afghanistan, endangering military comrades who participated in the lengthy search for him. Army General Robert Abrams, I wonder if he's any relation to Creighton, head of the U.S. Army Forces Command, approved the court-martial sentencing handed down last November. Bergdahl was reduced in rank to sergeant, from sergeant to private, ordered to forfeit $1,000 a month for 10 months. The judge also gave him a dishonorable discharge. The fine and reduction in rank were effective 2 weeks after the judge's sentence was delivered. The case is now referred to the Army Court of Criminal Appeals at Fort Belvoir in Virginia, which automatically reviews any punitive discharge. Bergdahl was captured by the Taliban and held for 5 years. I don't really understand that. He got nothing. I honestly, the more I look at, I've had some interesting discussions about, with people I know, about Haditha. And you know, really, and so you'll hear a series of programs. But, so what I'm most interested in, relative to Haditha is about the institution. How did the institution behave? And I would tell you this, first finding a fact in Mac's investigation, the 2nd Marine Division and 2 MEF failed the Marine Corps, failed the nation. Yeah, the people that led those organizations, and they walked away from it, they had a moral responsibility relative to military justice and the institution of the Marine Corps to keep its honor clean. They had a moral obligation to investigate that. There's never been a second that I was in Iraq or Afghanistan that 24 civilians dead and finding one weapon didn't get somebody's attention. So the fact that the 2nd Marine Division and the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force did not investigate that, in my opinion, is an absolute positive joke. It's an absolute positive joke. What those, and again, I worked for the guy who's currently the Secretary of Defense, and I saw most of the, I saw all the investigations that were being done in 2004, and we investigated on a regular basis. And if civilians were killed, that shit got investigated. In fact, I'll tell you a story. I don't want to lose my place. But yeah, 2 MEF, 2nd Marine Division, what a joke. They failed. They failed themselves, they failed the Marine Corps, and they failed the nation. Because the obligation they had was to look into that and to get to the truth. To punish the people that should have been punished, to vindicate those who shouldn't have been punished, and to get to ground truth in a way in which the nation would expect one of its branches of the service to look at itself when it makes mistakes. Honorably and truthfully. Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't a big deal. Bullshit, man. Bullshit. And by you saying that, calls into question your professional credentials. It calls into question your morality in combat and what the hell you were doing over there. So, anyway. Yeah, the story is this. There's a guy named, I think his name is Alerio Pintano. I've seen him on Fox. He was a lieutenant. Okay? He was a lieutenant in the Marine Corps. Alerio Gregory Pintano, a former United States Marine Corps Second Lieutenant. He's an author, a television commentator, and serves as a deputy sheriff in Wilmington, North Carolina. Okay? So he's made a living, and I would tell you the investigation I saw, you know, he murdered two guys. So ID goes off, and Marines in his company are either killed or wounded. So they throw down the whole series of snap VCPs, okay, around the area to catch anybody who's trying to get the hell out of there, right? Which is SOP. So you're out running a patrol, blah 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 blah. Something happens, and somebody's killed or wounded, and then normally they're trying to get the hell out of the area, so you throw down this series of vehicle checkpoints, and you start looking for people, okay, that don't belong. So anyway, they stop a vehicle that has two guys in it. He's got a sergeant radio operator that he is, the sergeant who he had fired from being a squad leader, I think, and a corpsman with him. And so they take the guys out of the vehicle, and the sergeant and the corpsman, they search the vehicle. The guys are on the ground, face down, you know, hands out. And Pantano is watching them. So they rip the car apart. They don't find anything. And he says, "Now look again. There's got to be something." And there wasn't. So they look and they say, "Hey, sir, there's nothing here." And he says, "All right, you guys post yourselves as guardian angels," which meant so they moved outboard of the vehicle. And so now they're the guardian angels. He said, "I'm going to have them look." And he tells them through an interpreter, you know, tear the vehicle apart. And so he's standing there in like the driver's side door. They're both on their knees. Looking in the driver's side door, and he shoots him. He says one of them made a move for his weapon. He shot him. He emptied his magazine into him, 28 rounds. He dropped that magazine, loaded another magazine, shot another 28 rounds into him, so a total of 56 rounds. Then he made a little sign that said, "No better friend, no worse enemy," and put it on top of the vehicle. And so I remember seeing the investigation and thinking, holy shit, man. So the 1st Marine Division charged him with murder. I came home, and I'm driving someplace, and I hear Michael Savage on TV just going off about this kid and how the Marine Corps is trying to hang him and blah, 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 blah. And I just remember thinking, holy shit, man. And I remember talking to friends about it and say, you know what, you could kill anybody you wanted to, just don't change magazines. And he, you know, he ran for public office here in the United States. And so you have a moral responsibility, because there's a huge difference between killing in combat and murder. And if you don't constantly reinforce that, there are those that will take advantage of that and they'll murder. Because they're either not right in the head, because of things they've seen, because they're pissed. So the role of the staff judge advocate in combat is a really important role to the moral heading of the division. And Marines have to know, if it's questionable, it's going to get investigated. We're the good guys. We're not the bad guys. And it's important when people cross that line that they be punished. And I remember reading those statements and going, And these are statements. These are handwritten statements after the fact by the radio operator, the interpreter, and the sergeant. And you're just going, whoa, shit. And so to see that stuff and look the other way, you know. And again, 24 people killed, one weapon found. So again, you know, if you walk through what the Marines did that day and you look at the broader context of what was going on in Haditha, you know, you can understand the first pieces of it. Okay? As it continues, you can't. Okay? And so to investigate it, it's like the biggest no-brainer known to man. And you have a moral obligation to protect the institution so the institution doesn't get drugged through the street. And when you don't do that, you are a failure to the Marine Corps. And you had general officers who failed the Marine Corps. Astounding. Absolutely, positively astounding. But so in looking at that, right, in looking at Haditha, I'm most interested in like, did people do their jobs, and what can you learn from this? Okay, the actual forensic stuff on the ground and putting that together, I'm not so much interested in, you know, although there's probably, you know, great interest in that. I'm not so interested in that, you know, but the different echelons, why did they why did they behave the way they behaved? And what should they have done? And it's to include, and I've asked this to a number of people since I started, you know, kind of reading about it, is what do you think the appropriate outcome should have been? Who should have been convicted? All right, if we wipe the slate clean and say, okay, we're going to do it again, who gets immunized, who gets convicted? What do you think? And it's an interesting question, and I haven't got any good answers back yet. Well, I'd have to think about that. Okay, think about that and get back to me. And these are all guys who are, you know, who risen in rank in the Marine Corps and understand, you know, what needs to be done. So, anywho, I want to, so Bo Bergdahl pisses me off, you know, and so when you look at military justice and you look at things like Editha, you look at things like Milai, you look at, I got an answer last week. How could the officer of the deck underway at sea receive NJP when she collides a ship with another ship and seven sailors get killed, the USS Fitzgerald? How could she be NJP? The answer I got, she's female. I said, come on. He said, do you think I would bullshit and say that flippantly? I said, your negligence leads to the death of seven sailors, and you're NJP'd? He said, give me another explanation. He said, the Navy didn't want to court-martial her and have everybody else, she's being scapegoated. I'm like, wow. So the truth doesn't matter. He said, well, the truth's a factor. I'm like, shit, man. Shit. And again, not only her negligence in driving the ship, but again, like I said, you don't realize 2 seconds before the collision that you're going to hit. You recognize minutes. There's nothing we can do. And nobody sounds a collision alarm or goes or hits general quarters so that those guys can get out of the racks and not drowned. So I say that in this backdrop of the Marine Corps at Parris Island as well. A lieutenant colonel who was a battalion commander who was told that this gunnery sergeant shouldn't be around, should not be around recruits because of an investigation that wasn't completed. Well, why is the gunny there? Well, here's the explanation I got. Well, there's a reason that MCRD is staffed in San Diego at 150%, and there's a reason that Parris Island is staffed at 80%. I said, what's the reason? He said, it's money. You can PCA somebody, okay, that means they don't get paid to move. You can just reassign them from Camp Pendleton to MCRD. You can just reassign them from Miramar to MCRD. But if somebody's going to go from Camp Lejeune to Parris Island, that's a PCS move. It costs money. That's the reason why. So the reason that he was there was because they were short bodies. That's why. If you want to know the reason, that's why. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't care if you're short bodies. Figure out another way. Whoever made that decision, they should be in jail too. But a gunnery sergeant is in jail for 10 years for hazing, and something he did deliberately, not negligence, but something that he did deliberately that was a factor in the suicide of a recruit. 10 years. The battalion commander, who knew that he wasn't supposed to be in that position and allowed him to stay there, got a fine of $2,000 or $6,000 or something like that, kept his rank and retired. Wasn't reduced. So this whole concept of message sending, like, you know, what the fuck is that? You know, you get to retire. There's no consequence to not doing your job. And that's somehow or other okay? I don't think I think that's wrong. I think military justice relative to officers is a joke. Relative to senior staff and COs is a joke. And now you're seeing it with Navy. The Navy, you plead guilty to, you know, to negligent, to negligence, or no, they're pleading guilty to dereliction of duty. And they're allowed to retire at their present rank. Is that okay? I look at all this shit and it's like military justice. What a shit show. And I think Bo Bergdahl is just another piece of it, which is what got me going on this little rant anyway. So that in the news today. Bo Bergdahl. Oh yeah. No problem. No prison time. The U.S. flew B-52s over the South China Sea. And we all know China owns it, so we can't do that. You're going to hear from Secretary Mattis here in the Q&A that was part of that went after the speech. The Q&A is better than the speech, and the speech is good. If you listened to it yesterday, speech is good, but the Q&A is better, and you'll get to see him on display. Let me take a break, and then I'll come back. We'll do the early bird. We'll check Stars and Stripes. There's a couple interesting stories in there. And then you'll hear Secretary Mattis, and then you'll hear Harris Holman, who has since passed away from Hatton, North Dakota. He was a staff sergeant in the, 2nd Ranger Battalion, that went up the cliffs at Point du Hoc. You'll hear an interview I did with him 17 years ago, in a little bit. So sit back, relax, enjoy the morning. Thanks for making All Marine Radio part of it. Don't touch that dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support. A call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place!
On a Wednesday. The top five stories. Number one, troubling U.S. Navy review finds widespread shortfalls in basic seamanship. This is amazing shit to me, honestly. A three-month internal review conducted by senior U.S. Surface Fleet leaders found some are significant concerns with the ship handling skills of nearly 85% of its junior officers, and that many struggle to react decisively to extricate their ship from danger when there is an immediate risk of collision, according to an internal message obtained by the Defense News. Led by the Surface Warfare Officer School, Officer of the Deck, competency checks were conducted on a random selection of OOD-qualified first-tour junior officers. Okay, so these are the newest officers in the fleet, but they're already qualified. So they've gone through a series of book tests and then OJT tests, and they've been found to be qualified to stand duty. Okay, so that's what OOD qualified mean. It's a formal procedure, blah, 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 blah. In underway bridge navigation simulators fleet-wide between January and March of this year, of the 164 officers who were evaluated, only 27 passed with no concerns. Another 108 completed with some concerns, 29 had significant concerns, according to the message, which was released by the Navy's top surface warfare officer, Vice Admiral Richard Brown. Brown, who leads the Navy's surface force in the Pacific, termed the results sobering. The evaluations raised distressing questions about the level of ship handling junior officers get both prior to their arrival at their first command and when they arrive. You know, one of the things I would tell you is that, you know, this whole thing about, you know, training before, you know, a lot of times, you know, people join the fleet, they, you know, you could ask Mike, you know, you want to learn how to shoot a mortar? Who better to learn to shoot it from than a mortarman? Hey, here's what you do. Here's how you do it. Now, the theory behind it that I learned in school and all that bullshit, I don't probably even understand that till I go to that course the second time. Because now I have a working understanding of the way everything works. And so if you want to tell me the science behind it, now I can actually understand it. It's not this theoretical event to me anymore. So OJT should not be poo-pooed. It's a great school. As long as you have great instructors. All right. In Tuesday's interview with Defense News at the Pentagon, Admiral Brown said the checks would be used to inform new training and development for young officers, and changes were already underway that show the Navy is serious about self-assessment and improvement in the wake of the twin disasters that claimed the lives of 17 sailors. Among the shortfalls, this scares the shit out of me just to read it. I haven't even looked at it yet, right? But again, here's what I don't understand. When you're about to collide, nobody hits. And again, I'm not talking about simply the OD, right? But you have navigators, you have watchstanders that are all senior, you know, could be senior enlisted guys. And nobody hits the collision alarm. Fuck. Among the shortfalls identified in the checks, one, officers struggled with operating radars and the associated tools at hand, an issue that emerged in the wake of the Fitzgerald incident. Two, officers had a firm grasp of the international rules of the road for navigating ships at sea, but struggled to apply them practically during watch standing, especially in low visibility situations. All right, that's simply a function of repetitions, right, and not allowing them to be certified until they can do it. So I don't know. Again, everybody who took this test had already been certified. And they have simulators now that you can you go in and you can drive it. It's not like, you know, back when I was on the Ranger, the only way you had books and then you went up on the bridge and you did it. We didn't have simulators for ships, you know. Now they do. You can go get all these different reps and all these different situations, what to do, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Maybe the Navy doesn't do that. Three, most officers were able to keep clear of close encounters with other ships in the simulator, but those that found themselves in extremis, quote, were often ill-equipped to take immediate action to avoid collisions, a factor that was a direct contributor to the loss of life in both the John McCain and the Fitzgerald collisions in 2017. In his message to the fleet, Brown said the OD competency reviews should be a call to action for the service community to get after its shortcomings. Quote, while the OD competency checks were a snapshot in time, we must be realistic in confronting the systemic shortfalls that they reveal in core proficiencies across the junior qualified members of the force, Brown said in the message. We as a community can and must tackle our deficiencies and ensure there is meaningful experience behind our qualification letters. Well, and let me tell you one other thing. I'm not sure that if you'd taken this test at any point in time in the history of the Navy, that the results would have been a whole lot different. Okay? So to me, where are the more senior people on that bridge that support him and help him or her drive the ship? Where the fuck are they? And let's give the test to them too. And see what they do. And if you're not good at what your job is, then what the hell are you good at? If I'm not a good infantry officer and I'm an infantry officer, then what the hell am I doing? All right, so we'll dial it back down. Number two, U.S. B-52s again fly in contested airspace over the South China Sea. It's not contested. It's a Chinese joke to see if we can pull this bullshit over everybody's eyes. Okay, and so here's the plan. We're going to close off the South China Sea. All right, Vietnam, not going to say shit because we'll crush it economically. The Philippines, they're not going to say shit either, because we'll crush them economically as well. Malaysia, they're not going to say shit. Okay, the United States doesn't say anything. It might do what it does, bloviate and then go away, but nobody's going to stand up to us. Australia, they'll do the same thing the United States does. We don't care what Taiwan says. We don't care what Japan says. All right, let's go, boys. Boom. That's China. That's China's strategy. In spite of international law of the sea tribunals ruling against them, right? In spite of all facts to the contrary, you know, and you'll hear Secretary Mattis talking about this, so I won't belabor the point. Number three, watchdog warns Pentagon, fix F-35 technical problems before full rate production starts. Gotta be shitting me. I talked about this yesterday. Yeah, we're screwed, man. We don't have enough in museums to go get parts, so help us out. Four, Facebook allowed Chinese firm charged as a national security threat to access their data. Joke. Facebook, joke. Right? Listen to this shit. Here's another one. At a delicate moment, U.S. weighs warship passage through the Taiwan Strait. Okay, now what I want you to do is, I want you to get your map, All right. I want you to either Google Taiwan Strait. Okay. So get your window up. And then type in Taiwan Strait and then watch what comes up on the map. Okay. The Taiwan Strait is a body of water between Taiwan and mainland China. How wide do you think the Taiwan Strait is? Well, let me tell you. The Taiwan Strait, I'll do it in miles. I got to flip over to miles. The Taiwan Strait is 167, let's call it 170 mile wide body of water. The Chinese say, yeah, this is ours. Don't come through it. It's a joke. And again, why can't you go there? Because the Chinese say you can't. It's complete shit. It's an international body of water. Internationally, we recognize 12-mile territorial limit, right? Everybody heard of that? Right? Wait a minute. I don't think it's 12 miles. It's 2 miles, right? Territorial waters, or a territorial sea as defined by the 2013 United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, is a belt of coastal waters extending at most 12 nautical miles, 22.2 kilometers, or 13.8 miles, right? But 12 nautical miles from the baseline, usually meaning the low water mark of a coastal state. Okay, and then there's a picture of, there's a picture of the South China Sea. It shows the Philippines, right? And its territorial waters. China, this thing's 170 miles wide. Yeah, don't come through here. And then people like, so what do? We do that? Like I said, it's a joke. We're playing the Emperor's New Clothes with the Chinese. Anything you say, bro, just tell us what we need to do and how far we have to bend over to kiss your ass. You know? It's absolute stupidity. Anyway, let me see. Commentary section, which I like to talk about. Commentary and analysis. One, after a major cyber attack, does the public deserve an explanation? It's been more than 2 months since the city of Atlanta suffered a cyber attack that left most computer systems down for days and some for weeks. Still, little is public about what and how the city plans to set about righting things for the long term. Does the city deserve an explanation? My instinct is, yeah, it does. In a democracy, I'm thinking it probably does. From Politico, the West still isn't prepared to stop Russian meddling in our elections. From Defense News, surface warfare, a running fix. Number four, Washington Post. I don't want to even talk about politics. This is kind of interesting. Worker bee satellites will weaponize space and help us keep the pace. It's interesting talking about communications and peer-to-peer war and blowing satellites out and things like that. You know, being able to launch, you know, the satellites that will go ahead and continue to, you can put them up in orbit, and you have multiples and blah, 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 blah. Kind of interesting stuff. How do we communicate in a near-peer environment? I still don't understand now. If the satellites go and our digital comm goes, what are we left with? What we're left with? Is that how it's going to work? Okay. All right. Stars and Stripes this morning. Yeah, there's a lot of news. Futima Commander outed. And see what I'm saying? Stars and Stripes. Like, where is this story anywhere else? Futima Commander outed due to loss of trust and confidence. The Marine Corps has relieved the head of one of its most important Pacific bases due to a loss of trust and confidence. Nowhere else. The third Marine Corps aircraft in a week makes an emergency landing in Japan. Okinawans are not happy. A Marine on Okinawa hits and kills an Okinawan man sleeping in the road. Yeah. How the hell does that happen? I'm not exactly sure. All right. Secretary Mattis, this Q&A, if you want to hear somebody at the top of their game, pretty interesting. Let me get to a text message. Do they have a memorial for guys buried from the 1983 Beirut bombing at Arlington? They do not at Arlington. That memorial is at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. It's at Camp Johnson. I know because I've seen it. And that's where you'll find that memorial. There's a big tablet that says they came in peace.